Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. How are you, my friend?
Great to be here. I'm great.
Good. Yeah, it's been
It's been
2 days, I think, collectively.
Yes.
So
interesting in very different areas, but it's been a bizarre little chapter here. I'm kind of wondering if this thing comes in threes.
I hope not. Well, if you consider two work days plus whatever happened with you, that's three. So we're good.
Yeah.
I don't need the hammer to drop on anything else.
Headbutting, don't headbutt floors in 7-Eleven.
No. Don't do that. And try not to work an 18-hour shift followed by another 12-hour, and then have your co-podcaster hit his head on the floor. It's going to lend for some good talking points, I think.
Right.
But
yeah.
Needless to say, before we dive into this maybe philosophical, existential, macro type of podcast, I always like to say thank you for all of our listeners out there all over the world.
Merci.
Yep, you're the ones that the reason we keep coming back, because we can have these conversations on the phone, but it's more fun. It's funner to do it on a recorded line.
Bigly. I guarantee
it. So, look, man. I don't know where we started going down this rabbit hole. This was actually supposed to be for another podcast, and it just felt right to go ahead in the fact that we're both very sleep deprived, fuzzy, and I think some of these podcasts lend best. These types of podcasts lend best when we're maybe not in the sharpest frame of mind. But you sent me an article. And this article is a CNN article written by Heather Cox Richardson that says, Americans are right to wonder if the great experiment has failed. And I'll post it in the show notes, of course. But essentially, the writer never alludes to the fact that it has failed. But are people right to think that it has? And I began this podcast, and I just sort of launched into this 10-minute rant to you, and thank goodness you had the foresight to say, just stop, let's record, because we have recently, on our more philosophical, political, macro views on American politics, we've tend to veer left, if I'm not incorrect on that. I think you might agree with that. We've talked quite a bit about the Democratic messaging for the midterms, what is fueling Democrats, what they need to do to win, the message that they have to have, and
this fits the trend then.
So yes, this does.
Back the other way.
Yeah, we're gonna probably wind up swinging the other way to explore, because there's been a lot of studies, analysis of these Trump voters. Who are these people that switch sides? Who are these outliers? And we started discussing this on Precast. And it's a bit of a revelation, but it's been something that I've really been mulling over, and maybe what I've been trying to articulate, and I may not articulate it that well on this podcast, but I think it's it's a framework for my further articulation as we move closer to 2020 and as we move closer to these midterm elections. And that is, do people feel that the great experiment has failed, and do they have sort of a right? I mean, everyone has a right to an opinion, but is it more real now, or have we seen this kind of rhetoric? I mean, obviously you could probably feel that the world was going to end during the Cold War and World War II, but this is different. We're not really in that kind of war.
This isn't talking about a military assault, folks.
No.
This is talking about an ideological shattering, basically.
Exactly. So
this is more than the Civil War, although the Civil War did change federal and state rights relations forever.
It did.
We'll move on.
Yes. So
yeah, there's other areas.
So to set the framework for what I wanted to talk about, there's been a few things that I have listened to over the last maybe 2 weeks, and it's mostly been podcasts and independent thinkers and and not really associated to any networks with any, I mean, they obviously have their bias, but it really isn't because of any organization. And the overwhelming discussion centered around two things. The first is how sort of incivility and where that comes from and why it might be bad or why it might be good. And the second is the economy and our movement forward and progression in this world as a strong nation. And I think they're linked. And I'm going to make the articulation to try to explain why I think they are and where we can actually find some commonality. And I think if we actually dig into these commonalities, you know, we're always trying to find that little bridge, right? That's what we've been doing on this podcast for over a year now.
Yeah, and you know what? They're going to have to be willing to do what you and I do, Nate, that they're not, and that's communicate and exactly. Not scream at each other.
Exactly. So I think if you
threaten
can
each other.
Yeah, if you can step back from a macro perspective and focus on the commonalities, and I don't mean the commonalities of social conservatism or social justice in the terms of the liberal sense, not those things. There's things that will never – there will always be a barricade between abortion. There always will be a smaller but barricade between family values. There will always be a little bit of a barricade between immigration. And that things, those things swing. I mean, one thing that we've seen since the election of Donald Trump is the Law and Order Party essentially turn on the law and order themselves. You hear things like the deep state, etc. And that, that's fundamentally –
terrorizing the FBI and CIA.
Exactly. So this is strange for a progressive, a bit more at heart, a center left individual. This is a strange thing to watch. That, you know, I never, maybe it was because of my service. I probably looked upon the CIA and the FBI and the Defense Intelligence Agency with a little less suspicion because we were working more towards a common goal than civilian counterparts probably did.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But there was, you know, I guess like a level of, not suspicion, but, you know, the Department of Justice with the war on drugs, et cetera. These are things that I think you and I both, even being a little on opposite spectrums of the center, we both agree on.
A bit of that's a waste of money.
Yeah, exactly. But what we're seeing are these shifts where all of a sudden there's more suspicion than there ever has been on the right to these institutions, and that's a fabric change. And you know, who knows if they get back in line if a more moderate individual or a less
I don't know,
gregarious type of Donald Trump is in office.
Yeah, let's think about that, because if they next go around are like, all right, we're gonna get this right, and nothing wrong with this person, obviously I like him, we're gonna nominate Marco Rubio this time. Well, so the question here is, will these voters stay in a camp that could take them either direction, or mm-hmm. are they going to get back under the party now that it's normalized?
Well, it's an interesting question, because I think a lot of what has fueled this suspicion in this deep state, yeah, is because their guy,
gun control,
yeah, their guy is under investigation from these departments. So it is as if the Law and Order Party is now directing their efforts towards someone like him. And I don't know if that was there that you would have this sort of suspicion, but it's there. Needless to say, it's there.
We've had suspicions forever, but do you think, and folks, when I use this word, it's not like a religious cult, but cult of personality is beginning to be able to be appropriately applied to him?
Yeah, it is, because...
Because that's your answer.
Because,
exactly. The police?
Well, here's the thing. It's when you can apply cult of personality to it, because I think there's far less, and maybe it's because people weren't principled necessarily in the first place for their allegiances.
Yeah, Tom Laren accidentally admitting she was for free health care for all.
And she also said something about abortion as well. And I don't remember what it was. I mean, she's obviously pro-life, but I think her stance on it was a little bit more liberal, I think, than some people thought that she would be. Yeah. So we do see this sort of fabric shift, and who knows, maybe there's a lack of principle there, and if this all blows over, the next candidate gets more law and order and everyone gets back in line. Who knows, you know? But in patterns change. But this is an interesting fabric change. So moving on from that, that's something that we have seen, and it's a little perplexing to me, and that cult of personality lends to that suspicion in a way that I think could sort of flatline that suspicion later on in 2020. Now, the other thing that I've been listening to is the economy. And I've heard the chairman of the Fed, Mr. Powell, talk about the economy on NPR. And there was a couple questions that I wished the interviewer had asked him, but his overall message was like, look, the Fed Reserve really has no, we really have no control over tariffs. We don't have control there. That's a World Trade Organization thing that, quite frankly, Donald Trump has bypassed completely and is sort of, in a way, kept the World Trade Organization sort of hamstrung until at least 2019 by, at this point, stalling any nominations or votes for individuals at the World Trade Organization.
Partial staffing right now, folks.
Exactly. So, yeah. So that being said, he said, look, you know, the economy, unemployment numbers are fairly low. People can always
have to do a nicer group of people.
Yeah. People can contest unemployment numbers. However, I brought up, look, you might not count these number of people. But at the end of the day, I live in a city where unemployment's pretty damn low, and it's turning small business owners to really struggle to find workers and are paying more for those workers to come. And he's talked about, you know, the tax bill that's been put into place and, you know, just these general growth numbers at like 2%. I know they like to be at 3% for overall growth. Either way, things are quote unquote looking up, and who cares what
he didn't possibly for 4% growth later in the year.
He didn't say this, but you know, it doesn't matter if it started with Obama.
It was a mic drop
with Trump. Yeah. So so there was another guy on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he's a libertarian millionaire who's done asset management, et cetera. And he's libertarian, and he definitely believes in, you know, the no minimum wage, no unions, and made a very compelling case for growth around those arguments, which I really disagree with because, again, a lot of these theories lend themselves to faith. It's this blind faith or good faith that we hear about, that people in those power positions are effectively going to make the world or the nation and the workers in this nation and the people better because of this sort of deregulation. Now, this really gets kind of to the meat of what I took in disagreement with these individuals. And this was the one thing I didn't hear from all these different people that I listened to about the economy. They fail over and over and over to mention, okay, before I drop what I was just going to say, let me just rewind here for a second. The one other thing that I also read was that they're going to introduce tax cut 2.0, or they're going to do another one, and hopefully they can do it while they're still in session this year, if not hopefully in 2019. And there's a piece of that.
I can't wait.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a piece of that that has to do with creating a bill or an act that allows people to save. And the champion of this bill, and I'm failing to who's championing this right now, and it doesn't really matter, says that, look, we are a nation, we're not a nation of savers, we're a nation of consumption. And I do agree with that, and we brought that up on the podcast a number of times. And however, in the whole spiel about talking about saving money, again, this guy and all these individuals, these fairly wealthy, well-off individuals, fail to bring up this one point over and over. And that is the fact that there is vast wealth inequality in this nation. And beyond the wealth inequality, which I don't have as big of a problem with.
Addressing the status quo.
Yeah, it isn't.
None of them are addressing the status quo,
yes,
is the point.
Yes, the status quo is that wages have absolutely stagnated over decades. There's no looking on the horizon and seeing where it's coming at this point, and standard of living continues to go up. That is the one thing that they fail to address. And I was screaming at the article listening to this, going, how the hell are Americans, on average, even young folks that start their life at 22, 23 with $30,000 to $40,000 in debt, and that's a conservative number, not to mention the standard of living that's going up for our older us skilled and unskilled workers with the Social Security fund that is fast depleting. How the hell do you expect people to save when they don't have money, when over half of the United States has less than $1,000 in their savings account? how the hell, and I'm using hell because there's another word that I'd rather insert there, do you expect people to save? So look, there's another thing. This is that good faith. Look, the tax cuts, it's going to, and I don't mean this on a supply side economics. I mean this in the literal terms of, look, the savings from companies at a 21% corporate tax rate will trickle down to the workers. We have it in good faith that that's going to happen. And you know what? The evidence right now, even though we need to give it some time, the evidence shows that it is not the case. One-time cash bonuses of $1,000 is not increasing the standard of living for an individual. It is absolutely, fundamentally not. And this is, if we're going on good faith, there's nothing that a tax bill, there's nothing of the savings bill, there's none of these things, the economy getting better, there's nothing that is going to save that worker who has the stagnation of their wages. And when you don't have money, you don't have a standard of living.
It takes money to make money.
That's what, yeah, exactly. But if you can't, exactly, if you can't make money, if you can't save money,
because you don't have the money to put in a bank account to tie in to a PayPal account, to have on your phone, to have the Uber app.
Exactly. So I'm not saying that this is the end all be all. I'm just laying this as a foundation as well to the kind of other part of my argument here. And this is some common ground that we can find. And look, I think that
maybe.
I think that this wage, and this is something that even Powell mentioned on this, didn't even mention on this interview about his, what he can do. Now, granted, I realize, and I'm a realist here, that I'm not necessarily in the Bernie Sanders, Cortez Democratic Socialist group that thinks we just need to completely redistribute wealth. I would rather see a different fix to this problem than
you want to reinstitute a high capital gains taxes then.
So yeah, so I mean this podcast really isn't about the nuts and bolts of what I'm proposing. It's more of a macro outlook here, and I think that this podcast can be a framework for moving forward.
Right, I'm trying to understand and help others frame this, but we'll have a more serious folks discussion of these items like supply side, the Fed, and all that.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Soon.
Yeah. So the other part of that too is the reality of some of this, right? So the good faith, et cetera. Well, there's some realities here that can just sort of back my case up of this wage stagnation and wealth inequality. Look, if you take the top 1%, if I make, let's just say I make $60,000 a year, I'm going to pay overall more in taxes than the 1% individual will. Now, he obviously is going to pay more in taxes, but in relative to our income,
right,
they will pay less taxes. And typically the wealthy don't just have savings accounts and checkings accounts like the most Americans do, if they're lucky to have one at all. Their money is tied up in capital gains tax, in real estate, etc. So there's just a fundamental difference between the wealthy and the middle and the poor in this country. And I'm not really focused on the poor. I'm not really focused on the wealthy in this podcast. I'm talking about the average American that probably makes above the poverty line to, I don't know, wherever wealthy starts. Let's just say $200,000 a year. So the reality is, the reality, when you talk about the great experiment that has failed or potentially failed, not failed, you have to take some of these things into account and wonder why people feel so damn disenfranchised. It's just the case. I mean, the average American doesn't know that they probably pay more in taxes related to their take-home income than the wealthiest. They probably don't know that. Probably be more fuel to the fire if they actually did. And it might be might not be a very good Democratic platform.
The trouble with that argument would be getting that across your everyday voter. We're not calling everyday Americans and our allies overseas on. We're not calling everyday people stupid.
No, there's ignorance is different from stupidity.
Right, that's a different ball. But yeah, it's interesting to think because, you know, if we do see that.
Yeah, and who knows? I don't know how you swing that very well for Democratic platform if you're looking to increase taxes, but this is where Bernie Sanders and the Cortezes of the world become very very alluring, because look, how do you fix needing more taxes for your platform and for your political ideology when if you start saying we need to tax the rich equally to the middle American? Now that starts sounding a little bit more enticing. I'm not getting into the nuts and bolts. I'm just saying that this is the reality in the United States today. So the fact that you're paying more taxes, the fact that it's impossible to save, even though the government wants to put something in place to help you save, you need the money to save. So,
oh, so you mean you don't like my idea for a flat tax?
I love the idea of a flat tax. But we can get in flat tax in another podcast, I think.
That would defeat the purpose of all that you just said, though.
Well, I didn't say I love it that I want to implement it, but I love it for an outside the box thinking as opposed to what we have right now. So, so let's move on past all this stuff that I just laid out. So this comes down to where we are today, a little bit of the tribalism, a little bit of the incivility, a little bit of the, or a lot of the disenfranchisement. So I started talking to you about this, and I apologize for just basically taking the airwaves on this one, but I guess this is articulation all coming together.
Yeah.
There's one pool of people, let's just generalize real quick, and that's the average worker, the people I described from $50,000 to $200,000 a year. I am just making numbers up here, use it as a hypothetical. These individuals, it's one group of people, and it seems to be two types of people in this group, in the two subcategories. The thing is that we all have something in common. The reality is we have wage stagnation. We're all bundled under this protection of the Consumer Protection Bureau. We're all lumped under, we're sort of all kind of under the, at the mercy of policy and laws that are enacted in a way that I think the wealthy in this country may be able to be absolved from that a bit because of...
What about the average workers, though, and those two things under that? You never finished the story.
Oh, I'm sorry. So there's... We all fit this common mold, right?
The two sub-bullets between them.
Yeah. So the two subcategories are the people that voted for Trump and the people, and not just voted, the people that supported him maybe secretly but didn't get to the polls, and the people that supported not Trump, and whoever that was, their lack of voting, their apathy to vote, or their just distaste for him. So we'll just generalize these two categories. I realize people are going to be crying foul. No, I'm not any of those. But okay, just bear with me. Okay, what I find, or what I think, I hypothesize, if you will, is that there's far more in common to these two subcategories than there are differences. Because if you were to break down something like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the basic things that we need, food, shelter, love, maybe love's one of them, I don't know, sex at least, just your basic needs, that's I think when a person can't save, when a person is sort of at the mercy of policy, et cetera, corporations, you really just want those things specifically. So
other two groups.
So these two groups, I talk about the not Trumps and the Trumps, okay?
Right. Those are subcategories.
Yes. So those are my subcategories of the one type of individual. Right. So let me further alienate some other groups of people from this hypothesis.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. I am now going to alienate social conservatives, and I'm going to, what was the other group I was going to alienate? I already alienated them. I was going to say those below the poverty line that are using government services like welfare, et cetera.
Right.
So, because the reason that I alienate social conservatives or social conservatives.
I think everybody on here knows why.
Well, you just do, because there's always, like I said, there's always going to be these barricades. And
you're pro-choice, dude. Many right-wing people, that's a non-starter.
It's a non-starter. It's 100%. And this isn't a massive... So these are the kind of people, the people that I'm excluding are those who will vote against their best interest over and over and over again if... on the docket is pro-life candidate, traditional family values, Bible thumping. Like that.
Short of blowing up the Capitol building, okay, mm-hmm. There's nothing that could be done by the Trump administration that was going to, in the future, that I could envision. None of that was able to keep me from, you know, voting against Hillary and voting for Trump.
Yeah. So I'm excluding that category because I think they always vote one way, always, and that's just the case. So that leaves these two groups. So who are these people? Who are the people that voted for Trump, who maybe were on the fence, about not Trump, and who are these people that voted for Hillary. So I contest, and I hypothesize, that there's far more in common with these two groups of people who, I think, for the most part, are the most, seem to be almost the most kind of tribal individuals or the people that perpetuate this. Obviously, I'm generalizing as well because we've got these two fringe groups that I just excluded, the social, crazy social justice warriors and these social conservatives.
Well, no, you're doing a fine Trump tonight. Burn it down.
So, and this is, these are the two types of people. And let me try to articulate this. Donald Trump came into the scene and he said some very, very alluring things. He said things like, "I'm going to drain the swamp." They've always been bringing you down. These are policymakers who have been doing nothing but write policy. They're K Street lobbyists. They're just shadowed and secluded from the real world. Now, he said, "We're going to deregulate. We're going to bring jobs back, and we are going to make America great again," not in the context of social family, social conservative values, etc., but we are going to make it so that, look, you can work, you can get one income, you can live in a nice little house, you can raise a family, you're not going to be mired in debt, and you can save money. That really appeals. You know what? That appeals to everybody in those two subcategories. That doesn't just appeal to the Trumpers, and that appeals to everybody. Hell, man, if you were to just drop that platform right in front of my face at face value, I would say, yeah, that sounds great. I'm fairly comfortable with that. Aside from my other aspirations in life and not necessarily living like that. But this sounds great. You know, for the average person that's got 2 kids, 2.5 kids, they want the white picket fence. They just really just want a life around their family and just to enjoy their years that they have together. That speaks to both categories of people. Now, it changes because now it's, okay, how do we go about this? And this is something that you and I have been talking on this podcast over and over. It's okay, we agree with the end game here, but the solution or the road to get there may be a little different.
Yeah, I mean, like, for instance, I don't know how much you followed it, but this new melee that's surely, it's going to happen betwixt the Democratic Socialists and Progressives.
Yeah.
That's not, because that's not, folks, the same side.
No.
Progressives haven't changed name.
No, no.
So, you know, Nancy Pelosi's thinking, great, we need a Tea Party for the Democrats.
Yeah, it's not doing much for unity of the Democratic Party.
I just was curious if you were aware of this.
Oh, no, I'm very aware of it. And listen, the movement that's taking, that I think is here, I, like, welcome. The Democratic Socialist movement is here. And quite frankly, everything that I'm laying out is, it doesn't surprise me that is what it is. Now, I agree that there's some things in there that I have a little bit of a skepticism about, and those are things like complete free education coupled with complete health, free healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. It's not that I don't think it's possible, however,
everything's going to be free.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it can't be possible. It's obviously been done other places, and we can talk about the slippery slope with all of that, but that's not the point. The point is, these anti-never-Trumpers sort of have found a commonality with that, because there's a lot of things about making America great again that, if you think about it, hypothetically, theoretically, that could provide the same message that on just a face value Donald Trump was saying. He said, let's make America great again. Let's be able to bring jobs back. Let's let you make a nice living. Let's let you get that house with the white picket fence and live your life out with 2.5 kids generationally, have your grandkids, etc. That's, the message is not different. It's the substance behind it that's a little different. So I hypothesize as well that if people were so disenfranchised when Trump came around in 2015, 2016, I don't know that a lot of people were really digging deep into the policy. There wasn't a lot of policy from Donald Trump. There really was nothing. When you looked at Hillary next to Donald Trump, there was zero policy from Donald Trump. There was just a lot of promises and a lot of rhetoric in the context of just kind of shallow rhetoric. But that doesn't matter, because the shallow rhetoric of a Democratic socialist, to me, is no different from Make America. It's the same thing. It's Make America Great Again. They want to give the same thing.
Right. And I'd like to remind people real quick, this something, it applies to anybody that uses the word, okay? I don't like, what are they called, imperatives?
Yeah.
Like that? Huh?
Yeah. Is it? Okay. It sounds right, yeah.
something like that. But everything's got to have an exclamation point, you know. Well, and they use, of course, the word great. They got to remember it's used in ways primarily has always been. It's really it's only changed in the past few decades, but it's been used in reference the word great now to notoriety. A great work of art. Einstein was one of the outstanding figures of the 20th century. Well, he wasn't an artist.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was.
The messaging is
right,
interesting.
Not good.
Yeah, not good.
It doesn't mean, you know, America is going to become good again, if it ever was.
Yes. And I think maybe that. But again, it's the word, right? So make America good again doesn't sound as great as make America great again. So again, like we, these two messages, I think at face value are incredibly similar. And I really do believe that these two subcategories, if left to American ignorance, and again, I don't mean stupidity, but ignorance, that either one of these messages could be a path. It could be alluring. It could work, right? Because again, if I also have suggested to you that if Donald Trump had just dialed down his sort of assholery by like 25%, I think there would have been a lot more people that would have jumped on board with that. But he did have to appeal to a core base that was there, and he did in a way. But he also appealed to people that voted Democratic for years, because he promised those years again. Not the years specifically and all the socialness that went on in those times, but just the concept of that time, the ability to live the way you did then, when money went a lot further than it does now. Now, I'm not blaming different individuals. I'm just looking at a broken system. I'm not asking for UBI. I'm just the system as it's moved along. We have just noticed these things, the stagnation, the debt, the inability to save, these basic needs that we have. So what I'm saying is, overall, that there's a far greater connection to this subcategory, these two subcategories, than I think people are even exploring. That there's been countless studies done now research that's been done in the wake of Donald Trump's election. Like, hey, let's try to figure out who these weird outliers are. Let's try to figure out what the point was. Why do we have this deep-seated racism? Do we have all this? No, it's the same people. They're disenfranchised Americans, but they went with a message that was stronger. This group, these two subcategories, want the same exact thing, and I think they probably could benefit from either direction going here. You don't think they could benefit with...
Well, they could benefit from sitting down and having actual dialogue with a third party, like, I don't know, state sitting there saying, look, you're not going to say no here. You have agreed on paper here. Yeah, tweets are forever. Whatever we got to use, but show that y'all agree on a lot of... Y'all say the same things.
Yes. Yeah. Look.
It's just there's a certain amount of, you know, obvious core social issues that obviously we don't have time to pontificate upon now, but the point is that could swing that another way. But we're talking about if we had a meeting just about their commonalities, I think they both would be stunned.
I think they would. Look, this group of people, these two subcategories, the Trumpers and the never Trumpers, or the not Trump, they benefit. So here's the one thing. This is theoretical that both of these things would happen. If there was trickle-down growth to the end worker from corporations and from big business, if they really did, if they said, look, we're not going to do dividends, we're not going to be beholden to shareholders, we're actually going to go and we're going to increase and again, there's so much economics behind this, so just bear with me on these very shallow theoretical sort of theories here. If the good faith was held up and the benefits and the wages went up in these core companies, this sort of quote-unquote oligarchy that this article sort of discussed, then what? This category of people, they benefit? Okay? Now, equally, if the Democratic Socialists, we'll just use them, because they seem to be the most liberal, so to speak, a radical side to this group, equally, if rich people started paying the same, we'll say flat tax implemented, whatever the deal is, or rich people were taxed a little bit more than the average individual who's trying to save a little bit more money, and there was a little bit less of complexity of the tax system, and we sort of shored up the inequality in our tax system, and we brought money back home that's been shored overseas, then guess what? Who else benefits? The same category of people.
We could benefit greatly, in my view, by making a government transition much smoother and smaller.
Sure.
In my opinion, but you know, you've got different groups, you know, like the extremes on both sides, you know, that won't come together one way or the other. Well, looking at this economically, like you have,
I mean, when you look at it economically, I guess the whole point is because we could most definitely dig deep into the economics of both of these theories. And I realize that there's holes that we could poke all day about the nuances of both of these. I think the take home that I'm trying to express here, and I know you grasp it completely, and maybe I'm just saying it because it's like this weird light bulb that's going off in my head. But that's the commonality of these two groups. It's less about the economics. It's less about that, and it's more about the commonality of these two groups.
And that's the thing I would say. Yeah. My view: 25% flat tax, and then have a capital gains tax for X, you know, capital gains income tax, dividends tax, whatever. But that's the way you do it, and then you'd have a flat rate for corporations.
Exactly. So I mean, that to me, that's not the Band-Aid that UBI is. That's not the Band-Aid of Social Security, although I think they're almost like the same thing if you kind of break it down. But that commonality is, and to recognize that commonality with the person that just happened to vote for Trump. They didn't really know why. It wasn't because they were super pro-life or that sort of alienated group that I created. They just felt like the message was stronger, that we felt like he was actually going to do these things. And we're not even...
He was a siren from heaven.
And we're not even talking about whether
Such
or not
a
he...
sweet person.
Whether or not he is doing that, because arguably he's not drained the swamp. But again, that's not what the podcast is about. The podcast is about this group of people. It's this fight that this entire group has. And just because you picked a side, just because you picked the person that you thought might do this better, doesn't mean that every person that voted for Trump must be pro-life, anti-immigration, anti-gay marriage, anti-weed. That's not the case. That's the narrative that gets created by things like fake.
You got to consider Trump voters like me.
Yeah. Look,
I guarantee there's more like me. I would bet your unborn children's lives. That's how serious I am. That if you gave somebody a candidate like that.
Yeah. I think there's the things like fake news, things like hyper-partisan news outlets. I mean, there's so many independent news outlets out there now because it's called the internet, folks. You can just do it. You can write a blog. So you can create these super hyper-partisan articles and this hyper-partisan following, and people don't even really know what it's like. Yeah, screw the other guy. And oh my gosh, they're letting illegals vote in national elections and this and that. And you create this fake news. You create this hyper-partisanship. You have the media that has one rhetoric, and Fox News, it's like I don't even know what the real news is. Like, it's so different. They're talking about the same thing, and they're not even reporting it. It's just opinion. This keeps happening. And then, you know, you have this suspicion of deep state and this changing of the fabric.
The Smith-Munn Act repeal looks awful nefarious now.
Yeah, right. It's
Doesn't
all,
it?
Yeah, all these things happen, and then you take this category of people and you just throw all that into the stewing pot, and what do people do instead of stepping back and realizing what's happening? They start pointing fingers. They start hating the other person when there's probably far more in common with this category of people than there is with any other category, diverse group of people in the United States. And this transcends color. This transcends race. This transcends gender. It's everybody. Now, are there reasons to point fingers about certain things? Absolutely. But I think overall, there's a far more, the average American Joe, there's far more in common. And you know what? If you recognize those commonalities, it's a lot easier to talk about the differences. And that's exactly what we've done here. It's a lot.
Exactly.
It's a lot easier to talk about the differences when you find the commonality first. And it's insane to me that families are ripped apart because of the way people vote.
The denominator is always the good of the country, and they're often very similar. I would say 75 to 85% of the people in this country have very similar views.
I 100%. I mean, you could just look at.
I mean, they just don't. They're not aware of it.
Yes, and my caveat to all of this is obviously. You know, there's, and I'm not saying that every family, if you have views and you don't like people because of the views, although I think that's crazy, views are views, an opinion's an opinion. Now, if you're backing your whole fabric of your life up behind an opinion, and, then maybe someone can take, it doesn't want to be your friend or whatever. That's completely fine. Whatever. I don't care.
That's another podcast.
It is another podcast, but views are views.
And not by us.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I can sit here and talk views all day, but at the end of the day, they're views, because I know that you and I have far more in common, things like military service, family background, common goals, et cetera, that if you say something,
yeah. Top alignists, yeah. In the
If you say something like, "Hey man, I don't like big government," and I'll tell you why, I'm gonna say, "That's pretty interesting." But at the end of the day, and I realize this is
sure we did that in the locker room.
We did. Bethesda.
By that, folks, we mean we had like a political salon up there.
Yes, not one might be thinking.
That's not what you were thinking. The Army and Navy weren't getting that close. We would go into the locker room, take 15 minutes, you know, to have a dip of tobacco, have just from the insanity.
Yep.
And we would 9 times out of 10 end up talking just, "What do you think about this? What do you think about this?" That's why it was so easy for, well, not easy, but easy for us to talk to one another about these issues and then try to make a transition to a podcast, because we'd done it so thoroughly. And you and I have always felt, and I still feel, that it's the road to get there where you and I differ.
Yes.
At time.
Yeah.
Whereas we're both trying to go to, Shell Beach.
Yeah. And listen, to me, it's awesome to have your little group. It's awesome to have your same thinkers or the like-minded thinkers. It's great. It's great. And it's even better when you can mobilize and take action to make a difference. That's great. But if dinner table conversation, podcast conversation, granted, I think we're trying to make a greater difference than just dinner time conversations. But if you've got split families because of politics and belief in this country, whatever, I'm losing my train of thought completely. I guess the point is, to me, at an individual level, it is more interesting to me to get someone else's perspective and why they think the way they think, if it differs from my thought process. Because you know what? I feel like there's a lot more growth for me than being in my own echo chamber and being around people. Now, it's great to spitball ideas and find solutions, mobilize, et cetera, for the people that are like-minded. But my growth really comes from talking to people that are different from me, that people that believe different from me. And because that's where it comes from. And this is the whole point I'm making about this entire podcast and why I'm so fired up, because there's so much more of a commonality that we have and we know it, but it's getting lost in the sauce.
We're going to keep playing the long game with that, folks. We promise. We're not going to let, because our whole deal is civil discourse. Mind say where all nonviolent views can come together to talk. Well, so therefore what he just went on about for the better part of an episode, very eloquently, by the way.
Thank you.
Is we're going to embrace that. We're going to continue. That's why I have, you know, Nixon, he has RFK, Robert F. Kennedy, you know, as our political heroes of yesteryear. They were very different men, but I believe they wanted a lot of the same things for the country.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So we're just trying to enforce the fact that we're going to look into it more, but we're going to practice what we preach, basically.
Yeah, indeed. So I feel like we've done that pretty well for this podcast. So enough of my blathering. We're at 45 minutes, and I think we got some more podcasting to do. So, thanks for listening to my rant. I haven't had one of those podcasts, but sometimes every now and then a few thoughts come together, and it's far better to do it with you on the other end of the microphone and in the headphones than just by myself. So,
and color commentary, if nothing else.
Indeed, indeed. So, well, with that, my friend.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.
CDs and shirts for you. This is a game, but for me this is work. I punch in high when I step on the stage and get paid when my record is played. Word to printmatic, I'm a poetry chick magnet with Goldie the Pimp habits. I roll with the limb that is drove in Omaha, be flowing for hick ass kids. Know that I was zoning at the